Hello, friends, and thank you so much for listening to the Hope Canteen podcast, where we look at one of the upcoming readings for insight into our walk with Christ. This is our quarter century podcast, number 25. My name is Steve London, pastor at St. Thomas Anglican Church, and as always, I am joined by some super smart people, Michael Rolfe and Stephanie London. So wondering, how are you all today?
Pretty good, just drinking my tea.
I'm just fine. We've had a busy week and had to make some big decisions, but good ones, and so it's been happy. We have a new car.
Now that is something to celebrate, yes.
Congratulations.
Yep. Thank you.
For our discussion today, we are going back to the Old Testament. If you wish to read the passage ahead of time, you can pause the podcast here and turn to the second book of the Bible, Exodus chapter 33, verses 12 to 23. Today we are talking about a critical episode in the life of ancient Israel. Moses is praying to God on behalf of the Israelites. And the reason he's doing so is the backstory to this passage. Moses is, if you'll remember, the central leader of the Israelites. He's brought them out of slavery, brought them to Mount Sinai to get the Ten Commandments, and then coming down, he sees that they have created a golden calf. In other words, they've completely turned away from the living God. Just before our passage, God is telling Moses that he will not go with them through the desert into the Holy Land now. And so in our passage, Moses is praying to God, reminding God of his promise. And because God shows favor to Moses, he agrees to go ahead of them. And then Moses asks God to show him something special, to show him God's glory. And God agrees, but tells him a puzzling thing. My face you cannot see, for no mortal may see me and live. Moses is only allowed to see God's back. So that could be a little bit confusing, but there are some important truths here if we look deep enough. So I am glad that Michael and Stephanie, you are here to help us to look deeply. I'm curious, what do you make of this passage today?
Well, the first thing that strikes me is just how Moses has grown since we first met him. I remember way back when God called him that he spends a lot of time telling God why he's not worthy, why he's not able, why he speaks badly. There's no way he can go save these people or lead them or speak to Pharaoh. And yet now Moses has gotten to the place where he can actually speak boldly to God himself.
Moses is the mediator. After the golden calf incident, God was quite understandably ticked. Well, this is not a good thing because they have created a god for themselves just so that they have someone to worship, an identifiable god. And God's not happy with that at all because obviously that's not the way it's supposed to be. And Moses is the one who comes in and because God's almost ready to wash his hands of these people. And Moses is the one who comes in and says, hang on a minute. Remember, these are your people. These are the people you have shown that you love. So, you know, we really need to try and reconcile here. And that's Moses' job.
When I read this passage, I think it tells us some really profound stuff about how the ancient Israelites saw God. And I think that's really important for us who follow Jesus because it's the background out of which Jesus is working. And one of the interesting things is this idea of glory. Moses was asking God to show him his glory. And so I went and looked that up. And it's interesting because glory is actually a manifestation of God's character. And that's what's really surprising, because normally we think of glory as something like fire on the mountaintop at Mount Sinai and this real power. But in this passage today, we have some really interesting truths. God agrees to show his glory, and he does it by saying this, I will make all my goodness pass before you. And then he announces his name, the Tetragrammaton, sometimes Yahweh, sometimes Jehovah. And he says, I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. And so this idea of glory seems to be something like a shining forth of God's goodness.
Yeah, and it's interesting that what Moses sees and what God shines forth isn't like the gods of the nations around them who are demanding sacrifice. I mean sacrifice in the sense of like human sacrifice. And are the show of power and anger and force. But God when God's character shines, it's goodness. That's something remarkable. And the fact that Moses and God can have this, in a sense, this intimate conversation, that's something remarkable about Israel's God.
It's really tricky here. Yes, God is very personal in one sense. When he talks with Moses, he's personal. He interacts with Moses and therefore with the people whom Moses represents. And it would be really easy for the people of Israel to somehow or other see God as their best friend, or their, you know, to create God in an image that makes them feel comfortable. But that's just like setting up another golden calf. Here, it's important that God be seen as having power over and above everything earthly. God is in charge here. And that's one of the things in this passage that I think is very important, that the control that God has over what is happening.
And that's the sense of glory as well, when you think of it as this burning fire that they've just seen on the mountain, that God isn't to be approached lightly, I guess.
And I think that's right. That's one of those other important truths about God. There's actually a sense, while God is loving and good and compassionate and gracious, there's also a sense that God is quite dangerous. I think that's the deeper meaning of this: my face you cannot see, for no mortal may see me and live. There's a beautiful passage in 1 Timothy where it talks about God dwelling in light inapproachable. And the Bible and the church has always taught that there's an aspect of God that we can never access, that we can never see, that it's just too powerful, it's too overwhelming. We wouldn't be able to be in the presence of God. And in fact, just before this passage, God says the reason he won't go with the children of Israel is because they're unholy, he won't go for fear that he might consume them. In another translation, for fear that he might annihilate them, the idea being just that his presence in the face of unholiness is just, it's overwhelming.
When we talk about glory, the link for me is, the Christian link for me is with the first chapter of John's gospel. The Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. Glory is the way in which the disciples knew that God was present, because his glory was evident in Jesus.
Michael, I love that insight. I think there's actually quite a good connection here in terms of that. I was trying to think through this odd image of face and back, because in Hebrew, my understanding is that face also means presence. And so in our English translation, God is talking about his presence will go with us, his presence will do this, but my face you cannot see. But in Hebrew, it actually says, my face will go with you, my face will be with you, but my face you cannot see, but you can see my back. And it's an interesting metaphor, face and back. So the face is the splendor of God, and humanity cannot, in fact, endure the splendor, sort of like being in the face of a huge fire. We just, it's too much for us. But we can see the back, the not splendor, but still presence of God. And I wonder if there's a sense, sort of like Martin Luther, when he talked about his theology of glory and theology of the cross, the idea being that he talked about theologians and Christians often want to see God's splendor. But oddly, if we want to see the true nature of God and the true glory of God, we need to look at the cross to actually find God in the humble and the small and the not splendor. And in a very odd kind of paradoxical way, that is where humans actually encounter the splendor of God, in the humble, but in most especially in the cross.
So maybe that's a place that we're more able to understand God, maybe? Or
I think so. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the incarnation, right? We cannot know God as God's self. He has to come to us. And so this is what we find in Jesus. He is the face of God to us. It's not the full glorious splendor of the one who inhabits light inapproachable.
That God decides how we're going to see God.
Yeah. But he gives us a way that we can understand.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the commentators says that exactly that, that this knowledge of God is not something that we can acquire by our own actions. We can't go and look up God. We can't find out about God on our own. The only way we find out about God is because God reveals God's self to the people.
Mm-hmm.
It's revelation, and it's a gift that we're given, the ability to have a sense of God.
That's well said. I think that's right on. That's part of that background of what Jesus is working out of, that if we want to know these profound truths about God, God has to reveal God's self to us.
An interesting thing about this chapter is just before this, there's this sort of looking back, and it says Moses used to go to the tent of meeting and meet with God face to face and talk to God like one talks to a friend. But then later on, we have this, you know, you can't see my face. Mm-hmm. You only see my back. And I'm just wondering if you think, did something change in that relationship as a result of the people's idolatry, or is there a different understanding of seeing God?
Yes, I actually looked that up. There's two senses of this word face. It's pretty interesting. Face to face, in one sense, can mean God shows his face to his people, meaning that he shows divine favor.
Mm.
And then I think there's the secondary sense of face, meaning the splendor of God that we can't inhabit. But that's an interesting thing, because it does go back and forth. If you go back to Hagar, she talks about she saw God, the face of God. And so mm-hmm. I think these metaphors are being used not consistently, but still giving profound truths.
I think there's hesitation in the relationship between God and Moses, because I think God is still ticked about the golden calf.
Well, Moses was pretty ticked too.
Yeah. Well, God is not prepared to just go back to the way things were. God has said to the people in the previous chapter, like, you go on to the land that I promised you. You go in and get into the good land, and I'll send an angel with you. But God hasn't yet promised to go with them. That's what Moses is trying to sort out and get God to be with them in this passage.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How shall it be known that I have found favor in your sight, I and your people, unless you go with us? Yeah, I guess also they're about to go into the promised land, which is really the beginning of a chapter in the history of the people of Israel. And mm-hmm. I like that Moses is saying, you know what, we need you, God, in this next chapter.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's not just that we need God in the desert, but we need God in all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we say, too. We need God. We're still on a journey here. And if we're going to get into a place where we have the fulfilled promises of God made to us through Jesus Christ, we need God to be present in all of this.
Actually, maybe, Michael, you already answered my next question, which is, as I always do as we end these podcasts, what do we personally take from this? And I think that's a really good thing, God's presence. Do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think that's good. Moses has done a great job here of keeping God on track with him and staying in touch with God and moving things forward so that the will of God can be fulfilled and the people can move into the land that they've been celebrating, singing about the possibility of this for years. And now suddenly the moment is about to come. And they might have messed it up with this golden calf thing, but now Moses has renegotiated and God's coming around because they need God to go with them.
Is there anything particularly you take from this passage?
Yeah, two things. I guess one, just yesterday, someone had a really, I thought, profound insight and said that this COVID time that we're in is sort of like the desert. And she said that the digital media that we have and the ways that we can reach out to each other in these ways are like the manna. And just going off of that, if this is a desert phase, if we're meeting God in a particular way, if God has given us provisions in a particular way, at some point this chapter is going to end and then we're going to go into a back to normal chapter or whatever. And it's important to know that it's just as important to be with God after COVID as during it, when things are particularly difficult in a lot of ways. That's one thing. And the other one, that when you were talking about God's glory, Steve, that came to mind was C.S. Lewis's beautiful image when he's talking about Aslan, who in his Narnia series is the representation of Jesus. He says that Aslan is not a tame lion, but he is good. And I think when we talk of God's unapproachable, untouchable, overwhelming glory, it's important to remember that, yes, it's too hot for us to handle in a sense, but what that glory is revealing is God who is ultimately good.
So if we're in the desert, I sure hope it's not 40 years before the end of this.
Better not be.
No. Yeah. I think for me, it's this question of presence. The presence of God in my life is very important. I'm quite taken by the title of a famous book called The Practice of the Presence of God to remind myself that I'm in the presence of God. But this passage also reminds me that the presence of God can be quite humble. It doesn't always have to be the splendor and the big, but the daily life, the people I interact with, the prayers that I have, the communities that I do, even in the places where I mess up, all of that is perhaps the back of God, but it's still very much the full presence of God. And in a way that I can understand and live in and find grace and strength from and to grow through this, I guess, time in the desert. I agree with you, Michael, hopefully not 40 years, but we need to draw on that presence of God. And I think he's faithful. I think he's here. Yeah. So thank you all very much for everyone who listens to our podcast. We really enjoy making these. If you do wish to make a comment or any other thoughts about the presence of God or anything else, just drop me a line at revstevelondon@gmail.com or put it in the comments on the website. Until then, we'll see you next week.
Have a good weekend.
Take care.